So I would like to talk today about some basics of our history and philosophy, so that we can spend some time together in a very pleasing manner, and making a little history about our movement and our culture, which is so ancient. If someone would ask us, when did you take birth, your movement, the way it started, when it began, I would have a very hard time saying it, because there is no time. Just like when you started, when I started, from the moment I took birth. So when God took birth? Never. It's eternal. So everything concerning him, his history, his philosophy, etc., is like him, it's eternal. He began from the moment he began. So by the definition, God is eternal. If he's not eternal, then he is not God. Because God must be eternal. There cannot be any limitation in God in any shape or form, even from the time, from the point of view of time. Cannot exist a God which is not eternal. So we, each of us, we are about 15, 20, maybe today, we come from the spiritual world. We are aliens here in this world. When you take birth, you look around, you say, where I am? What is this place? Because we come from another world. We come from the spiritual world. That is the world where God lives, where God stays. But for some reason, all of us had some desire to be without him. This is natural. When you go, what is this? This is natural. When you go to see something very beautiful, very appealing, very attractive, you kind of want to be like him. This is totally natural for a person. In the spiritual world, we watch Krishna, God, doing so many things, and we become attracted. We cannot not be attracted to him, because this is what Krishna means. Very attractive, everything he does, he says, he's very attractive. So we want to be like him. So this is a complex topic. I'm not going to now to dive into this. But basically we come down because of that. We want to be like him, and this is unnatural. So Krishna created a world where he is not present, which is the material world. Or we think that he is not present. In other words, while in the spiritual world we cannot be deluded into thinking that Krishna is not present, in this material world this is possible, because there is a veil in front of our eyes, in front of our mind. And if we want, we can not see God. God is present in one of his forms, but we cannot see. If we want to, we don't see. And if we want to, we can see him. So this is the difference between the material world and the spiritual world. The spiritual world, Krishna is present, and we see him. The material world, Krishna is present, but if we want, we can also not see him. And we come here. So Krishna likes us a lot, because we are part of him. Krishna loves us, just like a father or a mother loves a child. Look at the mother, how she loves. She's like this. She can try to do something, try to harm me, you'll see the reaction. This is natural, this is love. So Krishna also, God loves us, and he doesn't like that we are here. Because not because he is jealous, but because he knows that we can be happier if we stay there with him. So So he gives us two things to facilitate our returning back to him. One is the knowledge given in the books. So there are two types of books. One book is the knowledge spoken by Krishna himself, and the others are the knowledge which is equally perfect, spoken by Krishna's sent persons. The saints, the gurus, the avatars, they are sent persons. So books and persons. Books without persons do not work. And persons without the books, they do not work. They have to be together. So the Vedas are the books, that is the name of the knowledge. Veda comes from the Sanskrit vid, which means to know. Very simple, vid. And then there are the persons who are purely teachers, representative of this knowledge. So why the books are so important? Because they are always the same. They are statics, knowledge, which is always the same. It's a reference point. We need to have a reference point. We cannot have just knowledge which is applied, because otherwise we forget where we come from. So we need point of reference, and this point of reference are the Vedas. They are always the same through the millenniums and the centuries. They're always the same. They never change. But are everybody always capable to apply the same knowledge, the same discipline that much superior people practiced 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago? No, it is not. The Vedas, they prescribe so many disciplines. And some of disciplines are for great sages, some of these disciplines are for brahmacharis, some of these are for sannyasis, some for grihastas, and some from the devas, and some for thousands of different kinds of people. So who we are, what kind of discipline is for us. So that that has to be decided by the person. That is called the person Bhagavata. It's called the books Bhagavata and the person Bhagavata. The person Bhagavata is the one who has perfectly realized, studied and realized this knowledge. So it's capable to tell you, this part is for you, this part is for you, and this one is for you. It gives something for everybody, like chanting Hare Krishna for everybody. But to someone says, no, you should do this. For someone else says, no, you should do that. Like this. This is the guru. This is the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the interpreter in a positive sense. Sometimes we use this word in a disparaging meaning. Like, oh, you tell, you change. The guru does not change. The guru applies with wisdom. He tells you, you are not prepared to do this, you are prepared to do that. So this is relative knowledge, because it relates to you. Absolute knowledge is for everybody, always. But to reach the absolute, we need something relative that relates to you. Otherwise you just don't understand. We have experience, even in modern times. Well, it's about 80 years ago, with the appearance of the spiritual master, or our spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. He was a great, great, great intellectual. He was like an unbelievable philosopher. Even the way he spoke, it was difficult to understand. Just take his books, you understand what he's a philosopher. So can you imagine 18 years old American, you know, reading Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami's books? And he can, even American means everybody, not only Europeans, Australians, whoever. Nobody would understand. I am still, after almost 40 years being a devotee, I still have difficulty to understand it. It's very complex. So a lot of people who born in this culture at that time, in the 30s, in the 40s, that they became devotee because the type of presentation was just fit for them. But we were hippies in the 60s. We didn't know even who Krishna was. So when Srila Prabhupada came in the West, he started sometimes to preach about Krishna said to Arjuna, and while he was saying Krishna said to Arjuna, he was looking to the public, and the people was looking at him blank and said, who is Krishna? We are Arjuna anyway, you know. They didn't know. And Srila Prabhupada was conscious that people didn't know who Krishna was. And when he was describing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing with the golden hue of his beautiful body, etc., he was saying, oh, Lord Chaitanya is so beautiful. Have you ever seen Lord Chaitanya? And everybody said, who is Lord Chaitanya? Who is he? Nobody knew anything. So he applied, interpreted in a positive sense, interpreted knowledge for our understanding. And Srila Prabhupada, even today, we can still understand his genius in knowing how to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that everybody could understand. Because there is no point of being a teacher if your teaching is unintelligible. If people do not understand you, what's the point of speaking? You had to speak not to show your knowledge, your capacity, your intelligence. You had to speak to make people understand. And Srila Prabhupada was so expert in doing that. It was so easy. He was a genius. I remember Srila Prabhupada speaking Srimad Bhagavatam class during the morning. It was so easy to understand what he was saying. He was talking very basic knowledge. How beautiful our life was. I remember he was saying, you become Krishna conscious very quickly, just like Dhruva Maharaj one time he said, you know. Dhruva Maharaj became a pure devotee in 6 months. You can do it. You know, so everybody was like pushing, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and chanting Hare Krishna, 4 o'clock before Mangalartik. All our rounds were done because we wanted to be like Dhruva Maharaj. After 6 months, we understood that he would have taken a little longer. But the good intentions were there. And we could have done it, actually. And he was talking like the deities. Look at the deities, how beautiful they are. Just chant and be happy and chanting and take prasada. Is that so difficult? Just chanting and taking prasada and living in an ashram. What is that? Why you want to complicate with your life? Going out and working, getting a job, and being with materialists, hearing people talking about what, you know? Sports and what? You know, these kind of things. So Krishna consciousness was, you know, of course, still is, very appealing to everybody. So this is the guru. The guru is the one who is capable to make himself understand and apply the same knowledge to everybody, according to place and circumstances, without changing what is called the Siddhanta. Siddhanta, Siddha means perfect or final. Anta means at the end. So the conclusion, Siddhanta means conclusion. The conclusion cannot change. Doesn't matter if people like it or not like it. Doesn't matter if people agree or not agree, if you are in the US or you are in Italy, the Siddhanta cannot change. And Prabhupada never changed any of the Siddhanta. What he changed is what he could facilitate you to get at the Siddhanta. That can be changed. Just like preaching in San Antonio is not the same as preaching in India. Or preaching in India is not the same as preaching in Europe. Or preaching in Colombia is something totally different from anything else. You know, and preaching every country, every place has a different characteristics. And we have to, this is the secret of an expert preacher, is to open the eyes before he starts talking and try to understand who is in front of him so that this message can arrive to his heart and his mind. So Krishna was very kind and gave us the book Bhagavata, the Vedas, and the person Bhagavatas, who are the Vaishnavas, who are the sadhus. So now, we here in San Antonio, we have both now. We have Srila Prabhupada books, and we have the devotees. So everybody has to be very grateful to the devotees for being here, and try to take maximum advantage of that presence in this city. So what is the best way of taking advantage of their presence? Coming to the temple and do service and putting questions. Try to understand this philosophy. This philosophy is very important because it purifies the intelligence. If you don't understand the philosophy, then at the first difficulty you fall down, that's sure. Because philosophy is like the fundament, understanding it. You become very strong, you become very convinced, very robust in your spiritual life. Those who really understood the philosophy do not fall down. So there is no superfluous aspect in our philosophy, knowing history, knowing philosophy, or knowing all the different sciences that you find in Srila Prabhupada books or in the books of the Goswamis. All this must be understood. Don't fall down in the trap of saying, oh, this is superfluous, you know. You have to understand it all. Just put questions. There is no stupid questions. The only thing which is stupid is to have questions and not to put it. This is really stupid. So try to be attracted to this philosophy, try to understand it. So I would like to explain a little more about what is our philosophy, but I would like to hear some questions actually, to see what if something that I said until now has provoked some curiosity on your part.
I was just curious because you made the comment of how, you know, there's absolute knowledge and then there's relative knowledge that's given to us by a guru, you know, or that's the purpose of guru ultimately, because in order to get to absolute you need some knowledge that you can relate with to understand and come up to the platform of absolute. And I just see as an aspiring devotee, you know, trying to aspire for initiation, even within our movement, it's as like a lot of guru-disciple relationships aren't very personal. And, you know, you take these vows and you take initiation, and still there's not a lot of direct, like, service given to you from guru, you know, or like, and that you can really relate with. It's more, okay, chant 16 rounds and perform some service, you know. And I'm just curious because that is much appreciated, and I'm looking for something more relative, you know. But it's more just a overview of, like, he just kind of instructs you by using Prabhupada's books, you know. Like, this is what Prabhupada says, make sure you implement it. And it's like, well, I've read Prabhupada's books. It's just kind of, and then you ask him questions, and this might be just a general answer, utilizing scripture. Well, you know, Bhagavad Gita text says this, and he answers you like that. And it's not, you know, I don't know if you can clarify and give me like any more hope in, like, you know, this relationship, and maybe if I'm just misunderstanding, like, if it is deeper, or if those relationships could be deeper.
This is a very good question. This is actually the most important question that a devotee should try to understand during, in the beginning of the spiritual life, and even after, actually. So, this is a very nice question. I thank you very much for that. Traditionally, during what we call Vedic times. Vedic, what it means, Vedic times? Vedic times means the times when this materialistic concept of building up a society wasn't present, especially in India, but not only in India. So the Vedic books were the basis of a society. So we had another system. For instance, a very important aspect of the Vedic tradition was that the children at a certain age would go to Gurukula. Gurukula means the school of the guru. Mm-hmm. And they would stay there for some time. The relationship between the guru and the disciple was very personal. Day by day, not once in a year. So, and the guru never had 10,000, 20,000. Not there are gurus at the time, maybe. We see the Mahabharata, like Durvasa Muni coming to the Pandavas with 10,000 disciples. We had some. But there was the exception, because Durvasa Muni or Agastya or this kind of superhuman personalities, they were really particular, actually. But the custom was that the guru would take a limited number of disciples. Why? Because of what you are saying. The guru is a teacher. If he is not present in your life, how is he going to teach you? So it's important that in looking for a guru, you should look for a guru not only qualified, but also that can have a personal relationship. And I can see in our movement, like, there is a lot of social pressure. So you try to get initiated by the most important, the most famous, the gurus, who have 10,000, 20,000 disciples. He will even remember your name.
Yeah.
So you're never going to talk to him. Maybe once in a year, maybe. And I remember one time, there was this brother of mine, was a guru, he had a lot of disciples. So he, and there was one devotee, was a head of a Sankirtan group. He was the most important Sankirtan devotee in Italy. So you cannot forget someone who distributes 400 books every day. So during an initiation, he gave the same name of this devotee to another devotee. And someone said, his name is already taken. And he said, by who? He had forgotten it. And this devotee felt so bad because he gave his life to somebody who didn't even remember his name. And he felt a little bit offended. So we had to be sincere and, of course, finding the qualities, the characteristics. What is the characteristic of the guru? Samir Panin, what's his name? Samir Panin, Brahmanishtam. There is a very famous verse that I repeated 1,000 times. Anyway, this book, this verse, it's a very short verse, says that the quality of the disciple should be samitpani. Samit is a tree in India. And the disciples who would go to Gurukula every day would go in the forest to fetch these sticks from the samit tree for the spiritual master. Because one characteristic of the guru, that he keeps the fire, the sacrificial fire, always on to make offerings, etc. So 24 hours, the whole life, this fire never gets extinguished. So the disciples will go in the forest and get this, and then go to the spiritual master to offer the sticks with a folded hand. Samit Pani, Pani is the hands, no? Offering the guru. Then, Kshatriyam Brahmanishtam, that's a word I forgot. Kshatriyam, then after having described the qualities of the disciple, which is to serve the spiritual master very humbly. This is what this is the meaning of samipani. And then kshatriya means that the spiritual master, that the two words that refers to the quality of the spiritual master, is a kshatriya. Kshatriya means that someone is very expert, very learned, must know the scriptures. Otherwise, what does it teach? And then brahmanistam. Brahmanistam means nishta. Sta means to stay very solid. That the brahmanistam means someone who is solidly established. Not only knowledge, but in realization. In other words, must be a pure devotee. A guru who is not pure devotee is not a guru. So the disciple has to look for someone like that. It doesn't matter if it's the most famous, you know, big guru or someone who barely known all over the world. You have to find quality. Don't feel pushed by social necessities. You know, I am the disciple of this big guru, you know. And the other one says, you know, I am the disciple of X Prabhu. Who is X Prabhu anyway? I never heard about him. And so there was a lot in our movement of this problem. You have to look for someone who can teach you, who knows you. In our movement now there is a lot of talk about this. And that's why, since we understand the problem, that's why in the near future the number of initiating spiritual masters in our movement will increase a lot. There will be hundreds of initiating spiritual masters in our movement because it's needed. It's not enough just giving an initiation. Initiation is just a part. So now we can come to the second part of the topic, which is, does really the spiritual master who gave the Lord initiation actually abandon his disciples? No, it's not like that. Because if the spiritual master can organize his service in such a way that in a way or in another, his teaching comes through qualified representatives, or then the spiritual master should take a lot of disciples if he's capable to inspire his senior most disciple to represent him properly. For instance, when I became a devotee, I have known Srila Prabhupada only by knowing who Srila Prabhupada was. I always heard about Prabhupada. When I took initiation, I had never seen Srila Prabhupada before. When I met Srila Prabhupada for the first time, I was already second initiated. So then I met Srila Prabhupada, and it was very wonderful to do a very personal service to him for some time. But did I feel that Srila Prabhupada was absent? No, because there were a lot of very advanced devotees, disciples of his older brother of mine, who would have sent him very nicely. Now, third part. Does that mean that someone who is a disciple or a guru who has thousands of disciples should not desire to be in personal contact with the guru because he has his vani, his instructions? Of course not. You had to desire to be in personal contact with a guru instead of in person. This is called vapu. It's very important. Of course, we know that the vapu presence, the personal physical presence, will finish because, you know, our bodies will, you know, vanish one day. But this is exactly why a reason more to desire to have the personal association with the spiritual master while he is alive, because he will go. And I remember that in the 77, when the first rumors of Srila Prabhupada being really sick came in the temples, I was a Brahmachari at that time, so he and Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter asking all his disciples to go to India, just everybody. It was incredible. You know, he had thousands. He had like 5,000 at most, 5,000 initiated disciples at the time. Maybe Prabhu will remember that time when Srila Prabhupada was saying to all his disciples to please come to India because I may go. So I asked the temple president to please let me go. I wanted to go. I already wanted to go in India in 75 when Srila Prabhupada asked all his those devotees who had some tendency for intellectual type of services, you know, who had were scholarly or scholarly with a tendency to scholarship, to please go to India because he wanted to do in Vrindavan, he wanted to do a college. I wanted to go, and they said, no, you cannot go because you are Italian and we don't have many Italian devotees, you have to preach in Italy. I said, yeah, but Srila Prabhupada here is asking me to go, you know. The whole that I did since I learned how to write was writing, so they just didn't allow me to go. And in 77, I had a very strong desire to go to Srila Prabhupada, but they said no, because Vani is more important than Vapo. His instructions are here, now we have all the books, you know English already, you can read his books. Don't worry, Srila Prabhupada will not go, and Prabhupada went. So the disciple has to have a strong desire to be physically with the spiritual master and offering services. If this is not possible, then he has to understand that if he connects with him through an arrangement that the spiritual master then you'll be satisfied. And if this is not possible, then you have these instructions that you just follow. But if it is at all possible, we should decide to be with the spiritual master. Because reading is different from hearing. Hearing is more important, it's more powerful than reading. Because there is the whole of the bodily expressions and everything, something more that is present in the speech. And looking at the spiritual master while doing service is extremely powerful. I was with Srila Prabhupada 7 days, and it was very, very powerful. Those 7 days were meant for everything for my life. Probably I'm still here because of that. Who knows? So this is something that you should understand and think about. Any other questions?
Could you feel the spirit, the energy in the room when Prabhupada was there? The physical energy you could feel in the room?
This is very intimate because while trying to explain something that is not on the platform of rationality, that is in the world of emotions. And emotions are very much personal, are very much subjective. So I always saw that every time I try to convey my personal feelings and realization and about Srila Prabhupada, which probably are the most powerful feelings I ever had in my life, I would see that the effect wasn't good. I would see that the effects on the hearers weren't really, really positive, because most of the people, when in the course of time or even immediately, were trying to imitate me. Oh yeah, me too. I had the same feelings with my spiritual mind, and the whole thing becomes so emotional and gets on the material platform. So my personal advice, suggestion to everybody, if anybody has any feelings or emotions, whether for the holy name or for the spiritual master or for anything, just keep it for yourself. This kind of things very easily provoke probably the most deadly of spiritual disease which is called Prakriti Sahaja, trying not to serve Krishna but to enjoy Krishna. You know, since I'm so miserable, I go in my spiritual master and I am so happy. You know, this is most likely material. And if we want to convey to others, immaturely convey to others, the possibility that we are trying to pose ourselves as very advanced because we have these feelings, is very unlikely. So better to avoid it, and while talking, especially with younger devotees, just to keep sober and keep it on the rational platform, and try to see in your heart the quality of those emotions, how much they were material, how much they were spiritual, and this is better. Even Srila Prabhupada himself, very rarely, Prabhupada was an extraordinary devotee, because very rarely we saw him, and I know that you saw Srila Prabhupada, I don't know for how long, and Prabhu also, and we have three good brothers here, so it's very nice, although you are not initiated still, we are good brothers.
The first devotee he met was Vishnu Janath.
Vishnu Janath.
The first devotee I met was Vishnu Janath, and so was, I forget your name.
Reuben Ryan.
First of all, so it's kind of coincidental.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So, I forgot what I was saying.
I think you answered my question.
I was trying to say that it's very easy to come to the point of wanting to enjoy Krishna. And this is not, I was talking about how Prabhupada. Very rarely we saw Srila Prabhupada having ecstasies, or better, showing ecstasies. He was always very, very, very sober in front of others. Few times, of course, he couldn't keep it. And the way also he spoke to us, even when he talked about Radha and Krishna, these very esoteric principles, he always spoke very, very soberly. And if you take the Goswami's books and you read how Srila Prabhupada would talk about the same thing, you see the difference. You see? So this is what we should be. We are preachers. This is what Prabhupada wants from us. And you cannot preach if you give vent to your emotions. A preacher is rational.
Didn't he say you cry, you dry, or something like that?
Sorry?
He said you cry, you dry.
Cry.
If you cry, you cry, you dry. Prabhupada said that.
Yeah. We should. It's complex.
Special ecstasies and prayers are not really. The initial ecstasies you get when you're a neophyte, you know, something, are they special, or are they just emotional, or is it really, you know?
You see, only someone who is present within your heart can see the quality of those emotions. Since nobody of us is inside anybody else's heart, we cannot say, because we were talking about this, I think, a few weeks ago, in a home program, that the emotions of a neophyte devotee is mixed. There are spiritual elements and material elements. It's very difficult to separate them. You know, it's like the butter. When you put the butter into the fire at the beginning, you don't really see. You have to let it in the fire, and then it will separate. And when you are a bit advanced, then it will be very easy to discriminate between the spiritual and the material elements. So we had to not to bother about emotions or ecstasies, especially at the beginning. We had to practice. Just follow the instructions. And then it will come. But when it will come, just keep it for yourself. Otherwise, people will think, people will not appreciate. Like in India, what happens? In India, it happens that real sadhus, they arrive, they dance in a spiritually mad, fashion, etc. And the people who are not as advanced as them, they try to do the same. So the whole thing becomes ridiculous. It's a more isolated also in India. And it's just not, you just feel that something is wrong.
Guru factory.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we had to be sober in the way we practice.
So, as Srila Prabhupada left the planet, we saw that there are several of them who got very personal association, who were almost part of their trip and everything. Several of them fell down. But those who just got very little association, practically some of them got it from the men, and they took it more seriously than those who got a personal association of Srila Prabhupada. In fact, Srila Prabhupada got his spiritual master association very little. He just had, he himself agreed. So how do you reconcile, if it's, I don't minimize personal association, but there is something called giving your life and soul to the will and instruction of the spiritual master and live accordingly. Because sometimes if you are familiar with a certain personality, it may breed contempt, or you may take him lightly, or you may not understand the full glories. But if you try to understand the philosophy, and it makes more personal, I feel it's more personal. He's always there with you if you follow his instruction. He's present right now if you just try to follow. So how do you, I understand it's personal, is very inspiring, but there are so many examples we have where they got so much personal and they fell, and those who have not got any personal association or very little, they flourished and they became spiritual master, and they are having many thousands of them.
I don't think that the what?
I was just if it's okay,
I will answer. So, I don't think that Srila Prabhupada's presence may be a reason for fall down.
No, not like that.
Or the absence of Srila Prabhupada.
No, that's not.
No, I understand, but just I want to make a point which doesn't refer exactly to what you said. Or the absence of Srila Prabhupada, the physical absence of Srila Prabhupada's reason to fall down, or vice versa, is not that you can become a great preacher and spiritual master because you stayed a lot of time with Srila Prabhupada, or because you didn't stay with Srila Prabhupada, then you become a great spiritual master because you didn't stay much with the spiritual master. I think this is so personal, and everyone has his personal story.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of our present spiritual master, and not only spiritual masters, but in general, the wonderful devotees in our movement who do not give initiation, but still they are great, great, great devotees now, who had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada. Quite a few, I can make a list if you want. They stayed, you know, a lot with Srila Prabhupada. They became great. So it's all based on a very personal stories, private stories, and then it also depends of what Srila Prabhupada wanted from us, or what is your karma, or what is the desire of Krishna for you. For instance, Srila Prabhupada asked some of his disciples to be with him. There was one of his servants who one time he went to Mangalartik, and Srila Prabhupada rebuked him because he said, "Your service is to me, you have no business with Mangalartik." And we are talking about a period, if a devotee would miss a Mangalartik, basically was risking to be kicked out. No? It was a sacred institution, we had to go to Mangalartik. But so he was with Srila Prabhupada day and night. he would sleep outside the door, Shilakaui. So he didn't become a spiritual master, still I think he's a great devotee. And there is other devotees who were told by Srila Prabhupada, you have to go away from me. You shouldn't stay with me. Reasons, each of them, they had a reason. I remember one of my god brothers was very attached to Srila Prabhupada. He was at the time his secretary, and he was told by Srila Prabhupada to get away, and he didn't want to go. So Srila Prabhupada like blasted him, like really was furious, he was yelling at him. And then he went away. It was like, what did I do to deserve that? And because he couldn't stay with Srila Prabhupada, he went to Europe, and he became one of the greatest preacher and GBC and guru. He did thousands of disciples. So when he came back, he personally told me the story. And everybody knows it. And when he came back to Srila Prabhupada told him, now you understand why I keep you away. You didn't want to go, so I made you go away from me. So it's so personal.
That's not true.
No, that's education. So it's so personal. It's so, everyone is a story. We cannot generalize.
Yeah.
You see, there are, in our philosophy, there are general, what do you say? Generalization? Is that correct? And there are specifications. Generalization, you give principles. Okay? This is a general principle who float on our heads like this. You know? What are the principles? The principle is that you should decide to be with a spiritual master. I mean, it's so simple. You cannot be, okay, Hare Krishna, so good. You can advance even without. If you follow, of course, you have to follow and be strict, etc., etc., but you have to decide it. Who doesn't decide to be with a spiritual master? Then, other principle, what is? If you cannot be with a spiritual master, just follow his instruction. This is another general thing. Then, specification. The specification means which one and at what time this generalization applies to you in your life. For instance, you desire with a spiritual master, you could say, not you, Dhananjaya Prabhu, but just talk. No, I don't want to be with my spiritual master because otherwise I make offenses. I heard that. Because I see him as a normal man. Somebody else told me, no, I don't want to be with my spiritual master because I know what he wants from me. He didn't tell me, but I know. And another one admitted, well, you know, I don't want to be with my spiritual master, otherwise I had to get up every day and go to a monk. I don't want to do that. I'm just weak spiritually. I don't want to be with my spiritual master because every time he sees me here, he chastises me. I heard that. So there are many reasons which are, some of them are very spiritual. You know, I don't want to stay with a spiritual master because he told me to go preaching on the other side of the planet. This is a good desire. I don't want to. I don't want to be with a spiritual master because I got my family. So this is also another, you know, legitimate reason to not want to be personally with a spiritual master. And there are material reasons why you don't want to be with a spiritual master. It's complex. Very complex. Well, we cannot throw on the floor one idea and pretend that this thing applies to everyone. As you say, how do we reconcile? We cannot reconcile because every case is a case. In the spiritual world, there are a thing called personality. And Krishna relates with everyone in a personal way. And this is the role of the guru. The guru is someone who relates personally to someone. It's not someone who throws a principle and pretends that everyone applies it, because it's not like that. I remember one time Srila Prabhupada said, okay, stop with marriages. Nobody will marry anymore in the movement. So a lot of brahmacharis wanted to get married. They were very scared. This is not possible. Then we came to know that Prabhupada never said that. Prabhupada said to a group of devotees, no, you should not get married. which doesn't mean that everybody. Or when Srila Prabhupada gave sannyas to 2 or 3 devotees, then somebody who started to say, oh, Prabhupada wanted that all of his disciples took sannyas. And we were scared because we were young boys who wanted to, you know, eventually wanted a family, you know. That's our desire. We were 18, 19 years old boys.
Yeah, well, but correct me if I'm wrong, but Prabhupada, when his, it's important to have Vapu, but in the, many of the instruction, including Yamuna Mataji and several others, he insisted to have, you know, some local person or somebody as some guru, Shiksha gurus also, and as well as to have the instruction through his classes and follow.
Yes, this I explained, and I said, unless there's a guru who arranges the situation in such a way that he can trickle down,
yes,
he's very qualified God brothers. Mm-hmm. Also, we had to understand the complex topic of the guru. Guru is not only the one who gives you initiation. If someone thinks like that, it's really not understanding. The guru may be a Diksha guru, may be a Shiksha guru, may be a Rasa guru, may be a Tirtha guru. There are so many types of guru. And we have to understand all of them. Nama guru is someone who gives you first initiation. A mantra guru is the one, is another type of guru who gives you the Gayatri mantra. These are all different types of gurus. So we had to understand this topic deeply.
There's sometimes I hear an attitude that there's some people don't have the capacity to comprehend all of the philosophy, and therefore it's not worth the effort to try to help them understand. Rather, only a few can. But my understanding that I've held for a long time is how anyone who desires it can understand every detail about the philosophy. It's simple for those who are simple. But is it true that any person can comprehend this philosophy and come to the Siddhanta? And what is the main obstacle that someone might, that prevents us from understanding the philosophy? You said that if we understand the philosophy, there's very little or no chance of fall down if we truly understand the every detail. So what is the main obstacle of being able to comprehend it?
I think that the basic philosophical principles can be understood by anyone, just anyone in the world. Then all the corollaries, that's correct?
Corollary.
The vast universe of history and philosophy, which is around the nucleus, which is the Siddhanta, then that, I think, can be understood by those who are, or have a very strong desire to understand, or they are naturally brought to philosophy. Some of us, we born with a nature that came from previous lives, and this nature is the result of actions, many lifetimes, and that we can see. I saw in many years, like, there were devotees arriving in a temple and they just took a book, saw a book and took it. Someone else just didn't care about the books, they just took the nidanga and started to play. And or someone is just would be in ecstasy looking at the halava, you know, eating like anything. You know, this is the most common, probably. That's a joke. Anyway, it's that everyone came with a different disposition. Others, they just want to work. They love to work for Krishna. They want to do physical service. And others, they want to serve Krishna through the intelligence. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whoever reads and understands his philosophy is worshipping through his intelligence. So, that again, that's the role of the guru. The guru understands if you are an intellectual, then you should study more, or you are not an intellectual, and after all, you are not very interested in becoming an intellectual, then you should do something else. Maybe you are a musician, you should play for Krishna. Or maybe you are a physical worker, then you should work for Krishna. In other words, there is no limitation. There are no material limitations to devotional service. Doesn't matter what is your karma, your karmic setup, what you are, that can prevent you to serve Krishna. So this is very important. This is very important.
I have a question following his one. Kind of related to his question. I don't know about others, but personally, I feel very hounded by a lot of questions in life. My question to you is that when you become a spiritual, does those houndings go away? Do you?
You should talk louder, excuse me, because I have difficulty to understand.
Okay, my question is extension to his one. Okay, and I am personally hounded by a lot of questions in life, and I can't explain to you, but you can understand what I mean. And my question to you is that when you become spiritual, does those inquiries that hound you, do they go away, or you get answers to those questions? I mean, how do you exactly evolve out of that?
This is a very nice and important verse in the first verse of the Vedanta Sutra, which is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Ata is a very important word in Sanskrit literature. It's almost as important as Om or Vande or other type of words. Ata means the urgency. It's something that has to be done now. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Brahma Jigyasa means to put questions. If you have the desire if you have a lot of questions, you have to look for someone who is able to answer you. And you will see that if you are really, by tendency, an intellectual, you'll see that every good question, every good answer to the good questions will generate you more questions.
It's a chain. Rounds.
Yes, it's a chain reaction. As he is correctly saying, if you chant, then you become very pure, and your questions become pure. And you feel inside you such a pleasure. There is a word, it's like an internal, how do you say, when someone is very
joyful.
No, it's there is a word that is completely for me. Even in my own language, I don't know. Anyway, you feel very extremely desiring. You feel an extreme desire to know more and more. And every question gives you more questions. And every answer provokes more questions.
Enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm. There is another word. It's okay. So, exuberance.
Exuberance.
Internal exuberance. You become with purity when you don't sin anymore, when you don't do any sin, then you become clean, cleansed inside the heart and the mind. Then this cleanliness makes you very happy. Very happy. And when you start putting questions and receiving the right answer, you're like elated. And then you practice more, because you understand, if you practice more, you are more pure and more able to understand. And the more you understand the philosophy, and the more you decide to practice. It's a chain reaction. More questions and answers, and more practice, etc., etc., until you become completely pure. Why you become pure? Because it's so beautiful to be pure. It's so beautiful. Materialistic life and materialistic sin are so painful. such a bitterness. It gives you just bitterness. You just don't feel like you are happy. Just want to give it up. Just become Krishna conscious. And this is what we are trying to teach people. If Mataji Kalindi does this, means that the class is a success.